Michael Avery with Classic Business.
We need growth with a capital G, and hopefully we can find that now that the elections are firmly behind us. Investors will be shifting their attention to President Cyril Ramaphosa's ability and political will to address the issues of concern, namely the composition of the cabinet, as we've discussed, that'll be announced on the 28th of May, and how he manages to transform the economy with the promised policy reform and resolving the problems at Eskom that have been so central to the slowdown in the first quarter. The Youth Employment Service hosted a panel discussion on foreign investment in South Africa yesterday at Gibbs. That was really all about the country's outlook as a foreign investment destination. And we've invited some of those guests and one who wasn't there to explore this topic of how we revive a moribund economy. Firstly, Leon Ayo of the British Chamber of Business in South Africa. Welcome to the show.
Good evening.
And Bianca Bertus, who's a corporate treasury manager at Peregrine Treasury Solutions. Bianca, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Albie.
And Busa CEO, Tanya Cohen. As always, Tanya, a great pleasure. You weren't there last night, so you're the outlier.
Thank you. Good evening to you.
Now, Leon, kick us off here. And it was quite noticeable from my perspective that South Africa garnered less global press coverage than we usually do during the election. And to me, it's a worrying sign that South Africa's global significance is waning somewhat. What is the general perception of South Africa from the British business community?
Well, the British business community is somewhat obsessed with something called Brexit at the moment. So that's taking a lot of the headlines back home. And that's something we can look to in terms of South Africa doesn't operate in isolation. You know, we can look at the trade war potentially between China and the USA, the military potential threat between Iran and the USA. And all these things have impacts on in terms of what are the headlines overseas. And indeed, we feel the repercussions of those global activities. But we represented the British Chamber, British businesses in South Africa, and also South African businesses looking to grow into the UK. And we believe in a post-Brexit world, which is not a world that I would have chosen, but is a world which we're going to find ourselves in. There's increased opportunity in emerging markets. And South Africa is a better-known emerging market. That, you know, Britain has a long history, not always an honourable history, but a long history, whereby we have a similar culture, a similar language, a similar time zone. So South African businesses are looking at export opportunities, and UK businesses, once they understand what the post-Brexit world looks like, will look at South Africa with some optimism, because they do believe that the elections are peaceful and President Ramaphosa is the right leader. But there are challenges, and we can talk about mobilization of global talent in terms of visas. I've heard of a company today not being able to relocate here because they couldn't get visas. And equally, the broad-based black economic empowerment, as much as we understand it locally, it takes a long time for FDI people to understand how they navigate that.
And it reminds me of what was said towards the back end of last year when the president was accompanied by the finance minister and our trade and industry minister to an EU investor roadshow in Brussels. And one of the big concerns was once again the relaxation of BEE rules before investing in South Africa. And the firms were pointing to the positive effects that their investments were having in terms of job creation. It didn't look like the trade and industry minister, Rob Davies, was having any of it at the time. But we do hope that our administration is at least listening to some of these concerns. Tanya, from Busa's perspective, and I was chatting to Andy Crocker of Astral Foods yesterday, and he just said, get back to basics. They've got an operation in Standerton. It's had Eskom issues over the last 12 months. Now they're dealing with water shedding for a chicken operation. That's just disastrous, as you can imagine. And he's had to implement the national minimum wage at the same time, which they've done, but it's up their costs. What would you like to see from the new administration to revive the South African economy?
So we would certainly like to see that the new administration hits the ground running and focuses on a number of key priority areas. So some of those you've touched on. I think getting our state-owned enterprises functioning effectively, ensuring that they fit for purpose, and that those that aren't critical are no longer a drain on the fiscus is one of the key elements. We need to get our public finances under control. And we really need to focus in on the policy challenges. So you've mentioned visas, for example. I think the Black Economic Empowerment policies, which are not achieving the objectives that they should be doing, because we need to get far more Black-owned businesses into the economy and participating. But there's a host of policy frameworks that really aren't in place and which need a serious look at. So if one considers energy, for example, we've got the IRP, which is the Integrated Resource Plan. It's nearly towards the concluding stages. It's not done yet. But there's a host of other energy policies that actually need to follow. The Integrated Energy Plan, the carbon tax, that we need to understand the tariff structure in terms of energy. So, and it all goes to the supply of energy as well as the cost, because that is a significant challenge in terms of doing business. You're absolutely right about water. It's one of the areas that's coming down the line. But we can point to a number of policy areas across the economy that are really constraining us. So policy is one, and of course implementation is the other. Because if one can't implement speedily, if businesses can't get their licenses, they can't get responses from departments quickly enough, particularly small businesses, it really puts a huge strain on their ability to grow.
That was a message that came out of the presidency when Cyril was addressing his supporters as the head of the ANC at the time. But obviously, being full well that we do tend to conflate party and state, he was talking about execution in South Africa and the fact that the time for talk is over. He is a man of execution, though. If you read what Tito Mboweni has to say about him at NEC meetings, coming well prepared, reading the minutes, asking all the right questions. We're going to have to see that execution flow through quite quickly now, though. Bianca, from your perspective and from last night's panel, the Yes Initiative is a fantastic initiative, over 18,000 work experiences so far. But the target is 330,000 over 3 years to reach 1 million work experiences. So 10% of the way there, still a long way to go.
It's absolutely still a long way to go, and I think some of the key elements that we need to start looking at is how we are addressing especially youth unemployment in South Africa. And some of those issues really stems from the very complex labour legislation that we have in South Africa, taking away the ability for especially small medium enterprises to respond dynamically in terms of employment, and then also to adjust their businesses in times of economic turmoil as we are experiencing at the moment. South Africa is one of the countries with the highest youth unemployment figure, and in a demographic where the average citizen is 26 years of age, surely that should be inviting foreign direct investment that should lead to job creation. But the key question that we need to be asking is how much of the investment that we are receiving are actually translating into job opportunities, and how sustainable are those job opportunities in the long term? It's one thing supplying a student with an internship or giving him the necessary skills to go to market. It's a completely different thing to actually give him a long-term career where those skills can be applied successfully.
And that, that is the number one challenge in South Africa right now, is to increase the participation rate of young South Africans structurally for the stability of the economy. It has to be addressed. It is a longer term issue. If you look at skills and the capacity of the education system to produce the requisite skills that we need, I want to, if we can, Leon, come back to the issue of broad-based black economic empowerment. One of the EU proposals was that black ownership requirements be temporarily relaxed for new foreign investors and for further investments by companies already in the country. Is that the sort of innovation that you might be looking at, considering that government is unlikely to roll back the policy now, perhaps make some special concessions for foreign investors?
I think that would certainly be helpful, and I just agree with what Tanya and Bianca were saying in terms of the prohibitive legislation makes it very hard for foreigners, be they multinationals such as Rolls-Royce or small, medium enterprises, having to navigate these quite prohibitive labour laws. So we look at the Yes campaign, and to Bianca's point, what is the sustainability of these 18,000 roles that have been created, where we need to be creating 300,000? I think Tashmir Ishmael at Yes Initiative is doing a great job at starting, but we need to ensure there is sustainability. From an investor perspective, if you're of a certain scale to have your ownership at less than 51%, that's going to put off a lot of foreign direct investment. And equally, allied to that is the ability to bring in your own talents. That, should we say, you're an international company, you need to bring your international managers that know the product, know the culture, for them to come in and create, to grow the market and create new roles within that market. And presently, that is very difficult. It can take up to 6 months for a general work permit to arrive. And in that time, the company that's looking to invest in the country could have gone to Nairobi and executed that visa within 2 to 3 weeks. So South Africa has an element of complacency in terms of being the gateway for Africa. Mm. I've been here nearly 7 years. I believe in South Africa and I believe in the future. But we are losing out to other African markets as a point of entry. And talking to the youth employment, if we look at the whole scarcity versus abundance and flip it on its head, that youth, mass youth that we have is potentially the biggest consumer market for the next century. So big organizations want to access that market, and we're making it difficult for them to do so. So I do believe, you know, I'm a Remainer, I do believe in what the European Union is suggesting. I think the more ease of allowing foreign direct investment to come in the country will have an important effect on creating jobs and reducing that unemployment aspect.
And Tanya, listening to what we've all mentioned so far, the fact is these are largely, and I'm not talking ESCOM or maybe the skills crisis, but the policy issues, soluble. These are issues that we, with the right policy and with the stroke of a pen, these are issues we can turn around quite quickly. Visas, for example, would necessitate a really forward-thinking Minister of Home Affairs. What are some of the other key ministries that you hope will emerge in the cabinet reshuffle? We're already expecting a reduced cabinet in terms of size. What would you like to see as business?
So I think, obviously, in terms of the economic cluster, we want to see a structure that is high-functioning, that can make quick decisions, and that is obviously working very, very closely with business in the different sectors. Because what we've experienced, I think, in terms of the bloated cabinet of the past is that business is interfacing at a variety of different department levels, and quite frankly, they're falling all over each other. So that will help considerably from an economic perspective. And I want to just pause there, because I think that certainly if we're looking at investment and we're looking at growth and we're looking at employment, is that really has the key to solving a lot of the country's economic challenges. Because if we can get the right caliber of leadership and of staff that are in that economic ministry, I think that really that's going to set us on the right path. You know, one really needs to look to the stress that some of the policies put on small business to realize that it doesn't help that you have small business sitting outside the economic trade and industry department, for example, because they've taken their eye off the ball. But I want to come back to the one thing that you said, where you said it's easy with the stroke of a pen. I don't think we must underestimate that the extent to which this is going to take time, and it isn't necessarily a simple process, because the policy frameworks that we have aren't necessarily fit for purpose for the future. So if we look at our health policy, for example, is that we've got to do a lot of planning and thinking in terms of setting up a framework that enables us to progressively move towards national health. And that's by no means an easy and a simple task. Certainly visas, you're absolutely right. I think we could have sorted those out a long time ago and moved on. We're looking now at the Copyright Act, for example. It's just gone through Parliament. Huge challenge in terms of in terms of what it does to the developers' right to actually have ownership over their creation and IP, to be remunerated for it. Yeah. So, you know, there's a host of those types of pieces of legislation that businesses are struggling with every day. We look at the carbon tax. It's sitting between, at the moment, three or four different departments. And it really is preventing certainty, it's preventing investment, and it's preventing It's preventing businesses from being able to plan and budget.
And Tanya, we're going to be debating that on a panel next week with the Minerals Council and the Manufacturing Circle and a few others, because it goes live on the 1st of June and there's still so much uncertainty around that one issue alone. Just as we conclude, Leon, another important issue for business leaders in particular is accountability. And there was a very interesting story, and it was just a microcosm that got me thinking. And it's a story that's gone under the radar. There was a man who wanted to assassinate the former president and the secretary general of the ANC. He was apparently going around asking for funds for it, and he was caught red-handed. But he's already been found guilty. It's amazing how quickly, and while I'm not condoning his actions, the state can work at finding someone guilty and prosecuting them while we still have the perpetrators of state capture walking freely among us. How important is it to the international community to see those who were guilty of corruption spend time behind bars and in orange overalls?
Well, I think, you know, corruption is not unique to South Africa. We can look at we touched on Venezuela and Argentina. We could look at Brazil, and we could say that maybe some of the European markets are a bit more subtle in the way they navigate that. But I think accountability stems from taking responsibility for one's actions as a leader, and that can be in terms of making bad decisions that drive the share price down, that leads to mass retrenchments, which have a huge impact on the local economy and society, versus the outright corruption that we have witnessed. But again, I would say, you know, as a British Chamber, we know that's not unique to South Africa. I think what we're looking for is the ability for an environment where our businesses can grow and we've got access to that talent and where we can bring talent in. So I think the role of government is to create that environment whereby businesses can thrive. And on that, I think the role of a business has changed. And I mentioned last night that we were at Gibbs, and when I was at business school, we learned that the role of a business was to create shareholder value. And I think at the British Chamber, our new credo is that business has to be about more than just creating value for shareholders. It has to be about creating value for society, because we live in the most unequal society in the world here in South Africa.
As the Time magazine showed us. Sorry, Leon, I do have to stop you there because we're running out of time and into the next program. But a very good point with which to end on: how do we ensure that we recalibrate South Africa to create sustainable and inclusive growth in the world's most unequal country? Leon Ayo, Board Advisor for the British Chamber of Business in South Africa, Bianca Burtis, Corporate Treasury Manager at Peregrine, and Busa CEO Tanya Cohen, thank you all for your contribution, and thanks for tuning in to the Classic Business Show, which is brought to you by Altron. Altron, there when it matters.